Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. My name is Kayla Jenkins and I'm the Communications Assistant at the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior. I'm glad you all could join us for our presentation today. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you will see a Handouts tab, and here's where you can find the slides for today. Feel free to download those and take notes as you follow along with today's presentation. We will take questions at the end of the webinar, so please type your questions into the question box at any time throughout the presentation so that we can moderate them to our presenters. When the webinar ends, you'll be prompted to complete a short survey, and we do appreciate your feedback on this session, as well as ideas for future journal clubs. And lastly, watch for a follow-up email to be sent by the end of the day on Wednesday this week that will include a link to today's recording, the slides, and the CEU certificate that you are earning for your attendance today. So our moderator is Rachel Paul. She's a doctoral fellow at Columbia University.
Thanks so much, Kayla. So I'm really excited to present today's presenters. Dr. Ramirez is an assistant professor of public health communication at the University of California, Merced. She has a doctorate in communications from the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania, a master of public health from Harvard University, and a bachelor of arts in communication from Santa Carla University. She has 20 years of experience developing, implementing, and evaluating strategic, culturally appropriate behavior change interventions in multinational organizations. Dr. Ramirez's research aims to understand how the multiple levels of communication influence health behaviors and health disparities. Dr. Diaz-Rios is a cooperative extension specialist in nutrition and is the co-director of the Blum Center for Developing Economies at the University of California, Merced. She obtained her PhD in nutritional sciences from the University of Illinois after completing her undergraduate training in dietetics and a master's in medical sciences in Mexico. Dr. Diaz-Rios is a registered dietitian with experience in nutrition counseling and nutrition education in Mexico and in the U.S. Her research focuses on the development, adaptation, and evaluation of theory-based, culturally sensitive approaches to nutrition education and food access. So I'll hand it over to our presenters.
Well, thank you very much for the lovely introduction and for inviting us to present today. I am Karina Diaz. I'm going to start with a brief background of with the rationale behind conducting this study. So the intervention we are discussing today was implemented in this region of California, known as the Central Valley, also known as the San Joaquin Valley, which is considered the most prolific agricultural region in the country, and even one of the top agricultural regions in the world. All of the 8 counties that comprises this region are the top producers in the state of California. And the main crops produced here are fruits, vegetables, and nuts. You know, all those foods that we nutrition educators promote the most. So why do we need an intervention to increase access to nutritious food in a place like this, where this kind of food is clearly abundant? Well, unfortunately, economic disparities are also rampant in this area. And for instance, the poverty and unemployment rates in most of these counties are higher than national rates. So this has huge implications to the food procurement among residents of this area, where adequate access to nutritious foods is not necessarily the norm. So not surprisingly, low-income people suffer food insecurity at higher rates than less disadvantaged groups. And although this is true at the national level and the state level, very low food security is particularly acute in most counties in the Central Valley. And I single out Merced County here because it's where the intervention we evaluated took place. It is estimated that about 20% of Merced County residents are very low food secure. And as you can see here in the table, the gap is clear, even when compared with low income populations in California and nationally. And just to clarify, low food security is when a person cannot afford having quality and variety in their diet. And very low food security goes beyond lower quality and variety. It means a person or a household eat less or skip meals because they cannot afford enough food. So low food security is about quality, and very low food security is about both quality and quantity. So So the limited access to nutritious food is also reflected on the other side of the nutrition disparities spectrum. And once again, counties in the California Central Valley, like Merced, present obesity rates higher than California and even the country, meaning that the seemingly lower rates, obesity rates in California, are really not the full story. And then food consumption disparities are also clear and are here represented by the higher rates of consumption of sweetened beverages in Merced County compared to California. More specifically, specifically soda. And soda consumption is increasingly recognized as an indicator of diet adequacy. And it seems to be connected with other favorable behaviors, such as fast food consumption and not having enough vegetables. So clearly, nutrition status of the communities in the Central Valley is concerning. As paradoxically as it sounds, this is a reason and intervention to increase access to the very nutritious foods that is produced in this agriculturally prolific region just makes sense. And now Susana is going to tell you the details of this intervention and the evaluation we conducted around.
Great, thank you. So I'm Susana Ramirez, and we are sitting in a room together, so you won't see my name pop up. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about Produce on the Go, which from November 2013 through May of 2015 aimed to address food access issues in Merced County by providing locally grown fruit, vegetables, and nuts for purchase by people in food deserts within the county. And the way that they tried to do this was through weekly visits by a mobile grocery truck. You can see that there are two versions of the truck. The one on the left is the 18-wheel former soda distributor, and then the one on the right was the smaller van. Produce on the Go was developed by a local nonprofit organization, and it was initially funded with seed grants from the Merced County Human Services Agency, California Freshworks, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I should mention that the 18-wheel truck was essentially the instigator for the intervention. The truck was donated to the nonprofit organization by a drink distributor, and once that was there, the nonprofit organization developed the idea for the intervention and was able to obtain seed funding and then matching funds to show that they already had something to start the intervention with. And the reason for the two kinds of vehicles is that they allowed access to different types of locations, and I'll get into that a little bit more through the evaluation. The program initially launched with 10 sites in November of 2013, and it eventually expanded to 19 sites. Most of these were in Latino majority, low-income communities, and the semi-truck was retired in June of 2015 when the funding ran out. As of today, the van continues to serve several communities. And when I got involved with this project, I joined UC Merced in 2013. So a couple of months while they were already thinking about this intervention, and they asked me to get involved and help provide some evaluation data. And I immediately thought this is a really great project to put a social marketing lens around. And so I'll just tell you a little bit more about what I mean by that. The approach of social marketing considers principles of commercial marketing in the planning and execution of programs in order to affect health behavior change. And it's grounded, the idea of social marketing is grounded in exchange theory. So your consumers, your target audiences, have to perceive that there's a benefit in exchange for whatever you're asking them to do. Whether you're asking them to participate in a physical activity program, you're asking them to literally exchange their dollars for food to purchase something, or you're asking them to engage in healthier behaviors. The benefits that they perceive have to be perceived as greater than whatever the cost is to them. Another foundational principle for social marketing is having a consumer orientation, and this takes a couple of forms. So first, it's really critical to understand who the target audience is. An audience segmentation is one approach that we take to identify subgroups who are similar in some way that is related to the target behavior. This could be geographically located in the same area. It could be groups that have similar practices or cultural attitudes relevant to whatever you're trying to change, or who you hypothesize may respond similarly to an intervention. In addition to identifying audience segments to focus on, having a customer orientation means that every decision about the program is filtered through the lens of the target audience. That perspective about how consumers are going to perceive the intervention, it has to be critical throughout all of the decision making. In addition, what we traditionally think of as marketing consists of four, what we call the four P's of marketing. So product, which comprises the function, the packaging, any of the services that are surrounding what you're selling. The price, which again can be literally the dollars that are exchanged, but also the cost-benefit ratio that people perceive. So if you're asking me to go out of my way to shop somewhere that I don't usually go, that's a cost, the going out of your way. Place is where and what it looks like, where you're asking them to go. And then promotion, I think, is what people normally think of when they think of marketing. It's all of the advertising, the sales, and the publicity. And then finally, an important aspect of social marketing is the focus on continuous monitoring to assess and reassess how well the four P's are working. So I'm gonna show you how we express all of this more formally in terms of integrating social marketing into the food access intervention. So to begin, the inputs include all of the resources involved in the intervention, which together create outputs that ultimately result in outcomes that we care about, health. So for Produce on the Go, the inputs began with resources that included seed funding and the physical assets, the vehicles that form the foundation of the intervention. And it also included the organizational capacity, and as I'll get into a little bit more, this was really, really critical. So it includes all of the staff and the management who were actually running the operation. It also includes the community advisory board, which for Produce on the Go is comprised of leaders in organizations across the community that are involved in either food provision or nutrition education for different types of groups. So we had like the SNAP Ed coordinators, some of the local extension specialists who provide nutrition education, but we also had representatives from the school sites, like who are involved in early childhood nutrition education, and then partnerships with the farmers, because a critical part of the idea for the intervention was that this would be something that would benefit not just the consumers, but it would also provide outlets for local farmers to sell more of their produce locally. And so those partnerships were also very important. In terms of the outputs, the intervention activities consisted of weekly site visits. So once a week, each site would be visited by one of the two trucks. There was a lot of promotion. There was a lot of advertising in advance of the launch, and then to some extent, there was advertising continuously to remind people Thursday morning, the truck is going to be in your neighborhood, don't forget. There was also, there were plans for doing nutrition education, and some of this was provided through the grant mechanisms that supported Produce on the Go. So there were recipe cards and there were mailers. We had envisioned additionally doing food demonstrations and tastings. But those did not end up happening. And community events, taking the truck to community festivals and other activities, that was a part of the intervention, both to raise awareness, but also to extend the reach of the intervention. And then the mediators, the why and the how we theoretically thought we would achieve the outcomes were based on the integrated model of behavior change. So we have awareness, attitudes, social norms that would produce or relate to knowledge and skills and self-efficacy. And then a very critical part of assessment for this intervention was the extent to which it was sustainable over the long term. And the idea was that the seed grants would allow it to get started, but in the end, this was intended to be a business model that could sustain itself. And so from that perspective, there needed to be two aspects. So we needed to generate enough consumer demand so that the produce truck kept running, but in addition, it needed to be supplied by local farmers. And so the idea was that this would provide new markets for local farmers. And the outcomes were, we initially hoped to increase fruit and vegetable intake in this community for these longer term impacts to individual and population health, and then also to really affect the food system in the community. So we used a multi-mixed method approach, which is called parallel convergent mixed methods, because we did three different types of evaluation data collection that were all run at the same time and were independent. And we really took this approach because each of the types of data gave us different kinds of information about the project, but it was complementary, and so we wouldn't have been able to get the kind of big picture that we got about all of the ways in which these different kinds of data interacted with each other if we hadn't done the three types of data collection. So the national market comparison, so I'm going to actually talk about a little bit more of each of these in a second. So the national market comparison consisted of interviews with managers or operators of four trucks that were running that had similar visions. And so this actually started with, we didn't set out to just interview four, we set out to interview as many as we could identify. So what we did was identify all of the trucks that we could find using, you know, interpersonal connections, talking with granting agencies, looking online. And at the time that we did this, which was in the spring, early spring of 2015, there were not that many trucks that were operating or that we could find information about, which had an explicit mission of improving food access in communities that were vulnerable. So there were you know, mobile farmers markets and things like that, but they weren't necessarily focused on using this strategy to increase food access. Today, that's no longer true. I think I was just at APHA last week, and I think I saw four sessions that all were featured this kind of approach to food access intervention, but that wasn't the case in early 2015. And so what we did is identify the operators, and we actually used a semi-structured interview guide to understand how they planned the intervention, what did they do, who was running it, and really the goal was to identify and compare barriers and facilitators to this kind of approach to food access interventions. So we ended up with four comparison trucks. And we asked, you know, how have these trucks been engaging in the communities, and particularly engaging in communities where, by definition, as food deserts, there aren't other vendors for this kind of produce. And so what are the reactions that you're having, and what are the ways in which you get community residents to engage and purchase? And then from a second perspective is what strategies have they used to ensure sustainability? And so some of the key points of difference that we identified were that Produce on the Go was the only intervention that was an actual semi-truck that had refrigeration. All of the other ones were repurposed vehicles, and they were much smaller than a semi-truck. This had positive and negative implications. From a positive perspective, Merced County is geographically in the center of California. It is very hot here for a large part of the year. And so in terms of keeping produce fresh, there is really nothing that beats the refrigerated truck, which was intended for that. So that is a real strong plus. On the other hand, figuring out where you can take an 18-wheel truck and park it is a great difficulty, and the other smaller trucks are much more agile. The other trucks, this is a really important point, is that the other ones were serving urban or maybe slightly urban suburban communities, but they were addressing the food access challenges within a much more densely populated areas, where even though there are pockets of food deserts, the distance is not so great. All of the trucks required seed funding to get them running, and this was either USDA money or in some cases private money. All of them had aspirations to affect structural change in the food distribution systems and to increase food access, but they really varied on the extent to which they were able to affect the kinds of changes that they started out wanting to make. The trucks that we characterize as successful, meaning that they are still in operation and have a positive, vibrant, long-term future, were very successful at engaging communities, and they spent considerable effort and resources conducting strategic marketing activities. So they did targeted mailers, coupons, they used social media. Nutrition education was absolutely an essential component of outreach activities. They had food demonstrations, including tastings, partnerships with other organizations like community health fairs and block parties were very critical. The sustainability challenges were an additional distinctor, source of distinction between the trucks that were successful and those that are no longer operating or operating at the height of how they would like to be operating. The sustainability issues really reflect the financial realities of operating a retail food business. There are very high costs of the produce that is being sold, and also operations. And if you're trying to increase food access to vulnerable and low-income communities, the pricing is a very big deal. And so the high cost of production combined with the low prices that you want to be selling at to reach the communities that you want to made this a very untenable proposition for some of these organizations. To increase the potential for self-sustainability, some managers negotiated serving those who most need it, so being consistent with their original mission, by on alternate days serving communities that were more affluent. And so this was like had two personalities, this truck. On some days it's food access in vulnerable communities, and in other days it's the hipster produce truck in the gentrified communities. And this created a source of tension, but it really was the only way for some of these trucks to succeed for the long term. This tension also really manifests in operating decisions and where the locations were that were served and the frequency of the site visits. Community relationships very much mattered. Those who had strong community relations developed pricing and outreach strategies that were able to successfully navigate the tensions inherent in the sustainability challenges, but not everybody was able to do so. The environmental assessment was the second piece of data that we collected, and here we were looking just at produce on the go, and out of the 19 sites, we selected 5 sites to do in-depth analysis and comparison, and so we actually sent 2 research assistants out independently, so 2 different weeks they went to visit the sites, and they had a structured code book where they first of all took pictures from all 4 directions standing in front of the truck so that we could visually assess the differences. They also did an inventory of what kind of resources, services, retail were around where the truck set up. And it was really important that we think about how much inconvenience are we asking people to suffer in order to come shop here, which is it, you know, not a positive way of framing it, but one of the questions that we had was, well, how can we get people to come here? And again, we're trying to reach low-income vulnerable populations who probably don't have a car or have regular car access, and probably have not that much time. They're working multiple jobs. They're trying to get from here to there. And so asking them to go to a site out of their way at a specific time of day was a challenge. And so here you can see from just a little bit of data that I'm showing you from five different sites, this is the view if you're standing at the truck looking south. You can see that some of the locations are in the middle of places where people would already go. So one of the sites was right down the street from where people go to get their benefits, their monthly food benefits. And so they have a reason to go there on a regular basis anyway. In addition, there are some other services. There's a Head Start program. There's other things that are right there. Other locations were literally, there was nothing else there except the truck.
And now I'm Trina again, and I'm going to talk about another part of the evaluation. So this was an important piece of the evaluation, and it was about getting feedback from members of the intervention's target communities. And there were three pieces to this evaluation, surveys, focus groups, and in-depth interviews. So the purpose of the surveys was to collect data on perceived food availability and attitudes surrounding consumption of healthy foods. The in-depth interviews, besides collecting additional information on perceived food availability, we also wanted to explore awareness, perceptions, and attitudes on the intervention itself. So we wanted to know whether people were aware of the existence of the intervention, and also to what extent they felt comfortable shopping there. And also we wanted to know the barriers and facilitators to utilizing the intervention, some of which Susan already hinted already. Through the focus groups, we wanted to know the purpose of them were to corroborate or triangulate the perceptions and barriers to utilizations and access that we collected through the surveys and focus groups, but also to identify solutions and ideas on how to increase access to and consumption of produce. And our informants were mostly women, Spanish speaking, unemployed. A good proportion of them received food assistance. About half of them had children, young children at home. And also a large proportion of them were categorized as obese by their BMI. So from these surveys, we learned something very interesting. Despite being residents of food deserts as defined by the USDA, our informant said that access to nutritious food was not really a problem to them. They thought fruits and vegetables were available in their neighborhood. In other words, they didn't feel like they live in a food desert as conventionally defined. So to them, proximity was really not the issue. Rather, the way they defined access was mostly in relationship with cost. Cost in terms of price and time. Time to acquire, prepare, and also time they need to take before using the produce, maybe before the produce goes bad. And so then regarding the intervention, we found that most of them knew about it, which was a good thing. However, they noted inconsistencies in the quality and pricing of the produce. And they find the intervention not very appealing in terms of selection and price, meaning that the produce available was not always the kind they use or want to consume. And the prices were not always better than those in other food outlets where they used to buy produce. And then the main utilization barriers were related to the location and hours that not align with their own daily routines and schedules. And accordingly, the recommendations they have for us were around increase participation were around offering culturally relevant produce in a consistent basis and also increasing the frequency and hours at any given location. And I'll end my part with some quotes that illustrate this key finding on the definition of access to nutritious food by our informants. So they pointed out that the perceived cost, perceived high cost of vegetables in general, and when they are not in season, they also highlighted the inconvenience of having to spend valuable time to take advantage of good prices if they have to spend to wait in the line to buy the produce. And then also the fact that the fresh produce needs to be used in a timely manner so as not to go bad. And now Susana is going to talk about what we learned after putting all these different pieces of evaluation together.
So we take away four key lessons from an integrated understanding of the three different kinds of data. First is the real importance of community engagement and involvement in decision making. And we had, I mentioned in the beginning when I laid out the logic model that we had a community advisory board. And I said that the community advisory board was comprised of leaders in the community. And I do mean that. They were technically leaders. So it was myself, it was the person at the Human Services Agency who's responsible for administering the types of grants. It was the person at the school district who's responsible. It was the person at the public health department. What was missing in the community advisory board were any representatives from the communities that we actually were trying to help. And this, we think, is a big, is in hindsight a major deficit or reason why the project was ultimately not as successful as we wanted it to be, that some of the decisions that were made didn't represent what the community would have preferred or the decisions that they would have made, but they didn't have a voice at the table. And so when the funding was in jeopardy, there was no one from the community advocating and saying, we really need this, we really want this. They weren't involved at any point. And I'll give one tiny kind of silly example, but it really does exemplify the larger issue where this project fell down. And that is the pictures on the truck. The trucks were both painted, and it's a very vibrant, exciting, and happy, it's adorable. But they were made by the operators of the truck. There was no engagement by community stakeholders in something so simple. And consequently, we heard in some of the qualitative interviews that this doesn't seem like this is intended for me. It looks too nice. I don't shop here. I don't think it's meant. I don't shop in places that are that nice, and it doesn't look like me. And so really, there were comments and situations where we heard multiple times community engagement and involving them in the decision making was critical. The strategic importance of operational decisions was another lesson learned. So it seemed like a lot of the day-to-day decision making is something that should be left up to the manager to just run as is needed. But actually, a lot of those day-to-day decisions were strategic missteps. For example, we mentioned Karina when she was describing the results of the qualitative work. Some of the participants noted that they didn't have the produce that they were used to purchasing, that were culturally relevant, culturally important foods. Things like, for this Mexican origin population, cilantro and onions and avocados that were sometimes not available. And that can be chalked up, at least in part, to operational decisions about what to stock on the truck, that were where there was no community input and the management wasn't aware necessarily. And so the lesson, the takeaway is really think about who should be involved in the decision making and at what point are the decisions that seem like humdrum operational decisions really actually crucial components of the intervention. The definition of access, like Karina just mentioned, that for the participants and the community here, we identified the geography was not so much a barrier, but the price in terms of dollars and time were major issues. And so the greater lesson learned is, again, from the community perspective, what is the actual problem? And how is that defined? If the problem is access, how is that defined by the community? And then the final lesson learned are the challenges that we found in implementing this kind of intervention. And really these are logistical challenges, but they involve also, I mean, I'm just gonna keep hitting this, the community engagement and involvement. So thinking about which sites, where should this truck go, when should it go, all of these key implementation decisions that end up being quite challenging. So I just want to conclude with a couple of points, which is that social marketing as an intervention framework, I think, has a lot of potential. It's very easy to see in the context of food access interventions how it might apply. The mixed method community engaged approach to evaluation is particularly relevant and applicable, and I don't think I see it enough in food access interventions or in nutrition education, but I think it's a really promising approach. The success and sustainability of this kind of intervention really require meaningful community engagement. And then the final point that I'll conclude with is that in this community, which was largely rural, food insecurity challenges warrant unique solutions, that a solution that might work in a suburban or urban, very densely populated area doesn't necessarily translate. So we couldn't do a supermarket here in any of the communities because that just doesn't actually make any financial sense. There isn't going to be the population to support a standalone grocery store. And so to the extent that the mobile produce truck was innovative and sought to kind of mitigate the obvious challenges with an entire grocery store, it didn't work out exactly in the way that it had been envisioned. On the other hand, we had, through the course of the interviews, people from the community, the residents actually said, well, what if you do this or that with the truck? And so they were involved in thinking about maybe in the next iteration, the truck can serve as a larger scale community supported agriculture model. And so it can go and serve, be the distribution point for produce at existing markets, not necessarily food markets, but the corner store kind of markets that exist in rural communities. And we're actually working with the public health department now. They're trialing a small version of that separate from Produce on the Go, but where they're providing local stores with a CSA kind of model that then gets sold at retail. But that's another kind of solution. It's really thinking outside of the box, what kind of innovative solutions can we come up with to the challenge of rural food insecurity? I just want to conclude by acknowledging the other co-authors, Sulema Valdez, Arandira Estrada, Ariana Rees, and Alexandra Lemon, and the Produce on the Go Advisory Board for allowing us to be so involved in this project, and the Mixed Methods Research Training Program. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was a really wonderful presentation. If people want to type their questions into the question box, I'm going to read them to the moderators, and they're going to answer them. So our first question is, did you have to work through any city or country ordinances that would have been a barrier to where the trucks could have been parked?
Yes. So initially, we kept calling this a mobile farmers market, and we were not allowed to call it a mobile farmers market. I think that marketing materials had already been developed, and certainly the grants were all written with the term mobile farmers market, but that is legally not true because a farmers market is defined as the farmer who grows it is selling it. So that was one ordinance that we learned about. In terms of where it was parked, The ordinances I'm not so clear on, except, I mean, I couldn't tell you exactly what the ordinances were, except that the 18-wheel truck literally had to have a certain amount of space surrounding it in order to park. Like, it had to be a parking spot that was big enough for this giant truck. And then in addition, there had to be space for other cars to come for shopping. It couldn't be blocking anything. So that was a real problem. And then the other kind of ordinance that came into play was, we did get the I don't remember the name of the department that's involved, but the food safety people. And that was why, that was one of the reasons why the food demonstrations didn't happen, is we couldn't get permission, given the kinds of staff and volunteers that we were running, to do some of the food demonstrations that we wanted to do because of the venue and the locations.
Great. The next question is, did the project subsidize prices?
No, the project did not subsidize prices. There were incentives that we tried at one point. We would give, well, so the truck accepted EBT. And so I don't think we have any like double up bucks or anything like that in this community. And at one point they did, I think they talked about coupons, but actually I take it back. It did never happen. So no, it wasn't subsidized.
Okay, great. Doesn't look like there are any other questions. If anyone wants to type in their questions, I'll be happy to read them. Just wait for another few seconds here. And what are your next steps with this specific project? That's my question.
So this project is, it's not, I mean, from my perspective, this is Susanna, our role is over. We helped to design what the intervention would look like and what a preliminary evaluation approach, but the funding is not there anymore to support that. Actually, one thing that I didn't mention was how important the funding was for the big truck, because the 18-wheel truck can't be operated by just anybody. You have to have a commercial license to drive it, and that is an expensive proposition. You have to have, you know, that's a full-time staff person with a specific qualification. So this is really expensive, and that's actually why it's not running anymore. And I think it's kind of just limping along at this point.
Yeah. What advice would you give to researchers who want to start this type of project?
I would say, if you're a researcher trying to start this project, you should not do it. I'm joking, but I'm actually really serious. I think if there's one thing to take away, it's that if the community is saying, we think a truck delivering produce that we could purchase is a good idea, can you help us with it? That's one thing. But if a researcher wants to do this because they think it's a good idea, it's going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big lesson that we kind of took away. If you have that kind of partnership, if somebody in the community has said, can you help us with this, what would you do? I guess some advice that I can give on that is, I think that the social marketing framework, or any framework that you pick, setting out ahead of time what are, in fact, the components of the intervention that you think are critical, and how do they work together, and who does each of them? So all of the program planning in advance, I think that's really key, rather than trying to kind of slap it together. So thinking about what is the overarching framework that you're going to use to think about your model of effects, and putting that together. And not only do I think that's a good practice from an evaluation perspective, but I think it's actually a really good communication tool to make sure that everybody who's involved in the project is on the same page. So when you're sitting in a room drawing on a piece of paper what you think is going to happen when you do X, Y, and Z, then that clarifies assumptions and expectations. And I think that that can be a really useful tool for building partnerships that work.
And I would add, based on our results, that just take the time to involve the community as much as possible, get buy-in from them, and also design the intervention around their ideas and their will, their needs and wants, so that the intervention had a better chance, and also to empower the community and get ownership from them. Otherwise, as Susana said, it's doomed to fail. So I think community engagement is very, very important from the planning, from envisioning the idea to the realization of it.
Great, thank you. I don't see any other questions, so thank you so much to our presenters. I'm gonna hand it to Kayla.
Great, thank you, Rachel, and thanks again to our presenters for providing your research today. Just a reminder that when I close the session, there will be a short survey, and we do appreciate your feedback on that. Watch for an email on Wednesday this week. It will include links for today's recordings, the handout, as well as a CEU certificate that you are earning for your attendance today. Be sure to register for tomorrow's webinar. That is on geofencing and social marketing techniques for nutrition education. And that will conclude today's session. Thank you all for joining us.